Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard the Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Had to Go Out podcast. Thank you guys for joining us. Thanks for listening, liking, subscribing, sharing, following, and 5-star reviews all over the wherever you listen to your podcast. Really appreciate your support. Look forward to bringing you today's episode.
Yeah, everybody, thank you very much and welcome. If it's your first time, we're glad you found us as always. You're going to love what you hear. We've got a good one for you today as always. After you listen to us and love what you hear, go back, find us, find some other old episodes, listen to them. Find us on any podcast platform, subscribe to us, share us with your friends, give us a 5-star review, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, really any social media site, we're there. You just type in "they had to go out" into your search engine, you'll find us.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about our intros are crazy, man. We always try. Maybe we got to do it again at the end. I think we do, right? On the exit, just tell everybody where to find us. They had to go out, search it, share it.
They had to go out. Hey, listen, subscribe.
We've got a cool one for you guys today. So it's a rating that we haven't had before, which is always exciting because we get to ask all kinds of questions that
we don't know enough.
I don't know
to
anything.
Even ask questions of this particular rate, but
well, I mean, I could ask him the questions that we all have about, you know, that rate. you guys will figure it out pretty quick. Hey, who we've got on the line today? Mr. Adam Cravey, born in Miami, Florida, joined the Coast Guard back in 1992, straight out of high school, was with Company Echo 141. First station was Point Judith. He went from seaman to fireman there and then went to Corman A School. First assignment as a rated health service or corpsman was Cape May, New Jersey clinic, treating the recruits and the permanent party staff. Went from there to base Miami, and then independent duty training at the Surface Warfare Training Center, I guess, in San Diego, so that he could work solo. From there, they put him underway on the Coast Guard Cutter Spar out of Kodiak. Went from there to Sector Buffalo. And in 2012, after 20 years of honorable service, retired as a chief health service technician. Adam, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, we're stoked. I love having new ratings on because we can just talk smack on you and you can, you know, he can send it right back, but it'll be a good time.
I'm used to it.
All right.
That's good. That's good. Just all we need to know is foot powder and Motrin, right? That's all you need.
Motrin kills everything.
He laughs because it's true. Right.
With that being said, Adam, how you doing today?
And, good. I'm doing good, guys.
Good. It's good to talk to you. What's your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
Mine was a tugboat fire called the, if you look it up, it's the North Cape oil spill up in Point Judith, Rhode Island, back in 1996.
This story sounds familiar.
It really does.
Yes.
Yes, but from a different perspective. I like it. Excellent. Let's do it.
So basically, I was a non-rate there as a fireman. And we just came on, switched over. It was Friday. We did the normal Friday cleanup. So we were upstairs, you know, doing what we had to do. I was, you know, technically in my bed fixing my rack while everybody else was cleaning. And it was a fireman. Come on now. Well, anyway, so it was kind of a crummy day. I remember that much. And then the SAR alarm went off. And so we ran downstairs and, you know, got a quick brief of what's going on. I remember I was with Mike Underwood, which you did a story on previously. MK3 named Bill Benetti. And it was another seaman. I can't recall his name right now. But we loaded up into the van, and we had to drive like 2 miles to where actually our boats were kept. So we jumped on our 41, and we started heading out.
So you guys, Adam, you guys every time the alarm went off, you had to pile in the van and then like carpool down to the boats?
Yes.
Yeah, no lights, sirens. Do you guys ever hit traffic?
You know, it was part.
Dude, I thought you were going to say no. This is funny. Like, yes, we did hit traffic.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it was kind of like the back roads to get to it. So unless it was the summertime, there was not really any ever traffic. But we did have a radio, and we did have a blue light. You know, and technically, you know, we were only allowed to go 5 miles over the speed limit if we had an actual SAR case and had the blue light on. But we never got any problems flying down there. The police knew who we were.
Did you get a siren?
No.
Oh, nope. Man. Party foul.
It's probably good in the long run.
I think we would have been dangerous at that point.
For sure. Yeah. What as a non-rate at Point Judith, were you certified on the boat at the time? Like what was kind of your role?
I first started off, you know, as a seaman. I got all my quals on a 41, 44, 30 footer, you know, on the 21. So I did all the normal crew qualifications, and then I switched over to fireman and got, you know, qualified as, you know, an engineer on those boats as well.
Nice, so, which is pretty. Okay. I mean, that's pretty solid for a fireman to get engineer quals on everyone.
It was fun.
Were you any good?
Was I any good?
Yeah, like as an engineer, if they were like, hey, we're gonna need you to lock the shaft in place because you know whatever broke, could you do it underway?
At that time, probably.
Nice. Hey, say solid yes, answer. Yeah, solid yes. answer. That's all we were going for.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was shown how, but I never had the chance to.
Right.
So.
So, crappy day. You guys pile out of the van and onto the boat.
Yeah. On our way to boat. We jump in the 41 first. When we hightail it out the break wall. And I remember Mike calling in. Mike Underwood calling in and getting the weather report to see if anything changed because the waves were way bigger than what we were told on the way out. At that point, everything changed, gale, higher seas. So we turned around and went back in and grabbed the 44. So we headed back out the break wall. Of course, we're middle of a nor'easter. You know, the winds were like, I can't remember, they set up to 60-mile gusts or something like that. Water temperature was 31 at the time.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it was foggy and it was raining sideways. And I mean, it looked like it was sunset. That's all, you know, miserable and gloomy was out.
And what was the initial report, Adam? Was it for a fire?
Yes. A tugboat 5 miles offshore with a fire on board.
Are you just looking around thinking about like the irony of this entire situation?
It's raining sideways and there's a fire.
and you're on the water. Like, right. Man, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was. But you know what? At that time, though, I remember going out and I remember thinking this is the best job I've ever had.
Yeah.
I mean, we were a bunch of young guys on a ship. And monster seas, tugboating. I don't know if you guys have ever been on a 44, but that is a Cadillac tank that just, you know, it's slow as can be, 14 knots, but it will go through anything.
Right.
And that was, we were having a good time heading on our way out. As further we got out, I remember it just got foggier and foggier. So we couldn't see anything. And I remember this. Mike may not remember this, but I remember looking on the radar and not being able to see anything because everything was green.
Nice. Yeah.
And I remember Mike telling us to look for smoke or anything because we had used a direction finder to find out where they were. So we knew we were heading in the right direction. But it took us a little bit, you know, with the seas to get out there. So, of course, they drifted more. But I remember one of the guys saying, I see smoke. And you could actually see black smoke in the fog. And we kind of followed that smoke and came. And I remember the first sight was a big glow of orange through the fog. And then we got it closer. You could see that, you know, we're talking 15-foot flames shooting out, you know, out of the pilot house doors and just smoke. And I remember seeing the guys on the bow, huddled up on the bow.
What are you thinking when you see that? Like, what's your initial reaction as a crewman? You know, what do you think? What comes next?
You know what? On our way out there, I was really excited because this is like my first real case that you hear stories of, you know?
Right.
When we got on scene, I was a little bit in awe and taken back. Because if you can imagine sitting on a 44 and you're watching a 125-foot tugboat bouncing around in 30-plus seas with fires and flames and people on board, I mean, it's a little like, you know, it's a little humbling.
It's a little overwhelming, sure. Right? Could you feel the heat coming off the boat, too?
When we got up close, yes. Where we were at, when we were coming up at first, it was just kind of like, you know, it's just like, you're just like in awe, like, what am I looking at here?
Right.
So it was interesting. So I know as we got closer, Mike Underwood, the coxswain, was like, you know, let's get up onto the bow and, you know, we'll try to get the boat up next to it and try to, you know, offload them that way. And I know we got up close to it first, and I remember the MK3 Bill Bonetti, you know, we all had harnesses on anyways going out. And I remember him disconnecting and walking up to the bow, you know, clipping himself in the D-ring holders as you go up on the rail. And I remember I unhooked and we collided with the boat, with the waves that just shifted us and just pushed us right in the side of that bar and tugboat. And I mean, it was a good nail. And I was in transition from walking from where the hatch is, there's a knife edge, and then there's the outside and the port side. Where, you know, I don't know if you know where the knife edge is, and there's an outside vent right there. As the boat hit, I took that knife's edge, which, you know, had a rounded edge on it, right to the forehead.
Oh.
I remember it kind of dazing me, and I fell down. Oof. And I was kind of like stunned for a minute, and I could see stars, and I kind of came to, and I looked up at Mike, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "So I, you know, hauled butt and got up there and strapped myself in."
Why are you laying around?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, but we got up there, and I was, you know, strapped in, and I remember we were getting as close as we could, and we were hitting the side of that tugboat, you know, with the bow, you know, and of course you got the, you know, 20 foot differences at times, depending on the sea state, you know, and the waves coming. And one guy jumped across, and I remember we grabbed him and held on to him, and he made his way back. And I remember another guy tried to, but grabbed himself and stopped, held on to his rail on a tugboat, and it stopped. And if he would have jumped, because 1 foot kind of slipped, and he would have been, we collided right then. His legs would have been crushed.
Oh, man. Worst time.
And I remember, you know, the coxswain, I remember him saying, get off. And he, you know, we backed up the 44. And he was like, you know, this isn't going to work. We're going to hurt somebody. And he's like, gets on that loud hailer and tells them all to get up to the bow. And he talks about he's going to make them have them jump in the water. That's the only way we're going to be able to safely, you know, get them. So I ran into the back and I grabbed the wetsuit, the fins, the goggles, you know, the rope, safety harness. And I remember trying to get the wetsuit on. Now, it's raining sideways. We're getting covered in water, splashing, all that good stuff. So I don't know if you guys have ever tried to put a wetsuit on while you're wet. It just doesn't work.
So was that, is that part of like the swimmer outfit on the boat?
Yes.
Yeah. So, so basically you knew you were going to go in the water, and then they've got this, is it one of those, is it one of like the half leg thigh kind of wetsuits?
No, it was a full,
okay,
full wetsuit.
Well, that's a plus. That's, yeah, there you go. That's, yeah, it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, I ran back because I wanted to be the one who jumped in the water.
Hell yeah.
You know?
Still got you?
Just totally lost.
Go for it. We lose you?
Adam, you still there?
I'm sorry, man. My phone keeps cutting out because somebody keeps calling. I just told him to stop.
No worries.
That's all right. Yeah. Okay, so like Phil said you wanted to be the one to go in the water. Phil said, hell yeah, and then you're up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went, and like I said, I tried to put the wetsuit on, and the wetsuit just wasn't going on because I was soaked to the bone. So I put my anti-coverall suits on, you know, the full arm lengths, full leg ones.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I had that on. I put the swim fin. I had the swim fins in my hand. I put the goggles on, and I put the harness on me, and I clipped the D-ring, clipped the harness to the D-ring, and I looked at Mike, and Mike's, I just remember the look on Mike's face, like, he just didn't realize that I already had gone and done that, you know? So he looked at me, he's looking at everything, and he just looked at me and said, go. So I dove in head first into the water, which is, you know, not what they teach you. but I dove in head first, and I started swimming towards the bow of that barge where those guys were at. Now, 30-foot seas, nasty wind. It was just miserable. And I got as close as I could to that. And I remember reading the numbers on the bow. And I remember seeing the numbers 1, and then, you know, which is probably maybe 20 feet away from me. And then I saw that the boat went down in the swells, and I remember seeing 25. That was probably 5 feet in front of me, because the waves are, you know, the bow of that tugboat's going up and down, and right, it just, you know, so I started back paddling. It was just crazy. So I got far enough away, and I remember Mike on the loud hailer telling them, go ahead and jump. So these guys wearing full dry suits, you know, so one by one, they started kind of jumping in, you know, and I would do my normal type of swim around them, make sure they're okay, get them, you know, next to the line. So once I got to
Have two lines out there, Adam, or just like the one that you were tethered to? They didn't have to pull you back with the victim?
Just the one I was tethered with.
Okay, so what were they doing? Just pulling themselves along the line back to the boat?
At that time, only thing I remember is them holding on to the line and looking at me with their eyes.
All right. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, as I got to the last guy, I looked at the MK3 and the SN. They're sitting on the back of the 44, you know, trying to pull this line to get them in. And I don't know how, man, but that line was wrapped around and tangled these guys up. So somehow, I don't know how the line tangled them all up, but they didn't have to hold on. They were in the line. So I must have done enough loops around them in the waves, you know, so when they pulled, they had all five of us on the line together.
And what were they? Were they in anti-exposure or not? Were they in Gumby suits?
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes. Gumby suits, yep. So, and I remember getting up to the side of the 44, and you know, the anti-coveralls doesn't keep water out.
Yeah, it's basically a big wetsuit that's just not tight. Yeah.
Yeah, the 30-degree water becomes no warmer.
Right.
Yes. And yeah, so I remember getting up to the side of the 44, and they were getting some of the guys on the boat, and I couldn't feel my hands, I couldn't feel my feet.
Right.
You know, I could barely feel the top of my head.
And you've probably got a concussion at this point, too, so.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah. But I remember the tug taking a big swing towards the 44. And I remember the coxswain saying, hold on, and Mike gunned it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm hanging off the side of the boat.
Right, you're basically tied to the boat like a water skier without water skis at this point.
Yes. Yep. And there's two more guys hanging off the side. They hadn't gotten out yet. So I just remember the boat, you know, and I'm down there and getting covered in black, you know, the rolling coal that they do when you throttle up a 44.
Right.
And it's covered. And I didn't realize what was going on. But next thing you know, I'm getting washed away towards the back and watching the 44 hightail it to get away from this boat that's swung on us.
Sure.
I remember looking back and there's two guys in the water. So I'm thinking, holy crap. So I'm not thinking about this tether. So I swim out and grab one guy under one arm and one guy under the other arm. And then I feel this big old snap. I hear the snap and I feel, you know, my chest just go, you know, from the D-ring, because that tethered rope, which is still attached to that 44, now is, I'm looking at it, and that tether is across the bow of the tugboat, snapping, starting to pull us towards the tugboat.
That's a heck of a development, isn't it? Yep. So much for safety.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, and then I started freaking out, you know. I mean, you can imagine being drugged in 30-foot seas to the bow of this 44, or I'm sorry, tugboat, not seeing the 44. And next thing you know, I get slack in the line and I see that 44. I can hear it. And I know Mike had it, that throttle just gunned in reverse, man. On all I saw was that thing. I can just remember the look of that 44. It looked like it was doing a wheelie, hauling ass backwards, black nice. Smoke, like rolling coal. It was just nuts. And all I remember is Bill Benetti, the MK3, just grabbing. He was screaming, pulling us in, hauling us in as fast as he could, you know. And finally we got up on the side, and I was the last one out. And these two guys, well, I remember one guy used me as a step. I mean, he had his foot on my shoulder, you know, to get out of the boat and into the well. And finally I had a yell, get me out. And they pulled me out, and I just remember laying there. I felt like I was kind of going in and out of consciousness. I just was so weak, and I just couldn't do anything. I couldn't stand.
Right.
And I remember being put in the turtle back, and next thing you know, I'm inside the hypothermia bag with the MK3 Bill Benetti. You know, I'm stripped down. He's stripped down. Not completely, but just to our drawers.
That's still a shipmate right there. Yeah, Adam. Right? You know, that's a shipmate, yeah. Dude. Yeah.
You know, the heat's cranking back there. All the other guys are just kind of sitting there looking at us, you know. The coxswain, Mike's on the radio doing what he's got to do. And next thing you know, we're at the dock. And once we're at the dock, there was an ambulance crew waiting for me. And I kind of was, you know, I don't know. I don't remember a lot. So I don't know if I was just kind of coming in and out. But I remember my XPO sitting there at the dock, and there was camera crews there. And I remember him throwing a towel over my face because people were putting, you know, video cameras directly in my face from the news.
Right.
And then I remember being in the ambulance, you know, them shoving, you know, heat packs inside my groin, under my armpits, under my neck, all that good stuff. And then I remember waking up in the hospital, you know, and they had everything you could imagine, the heat warming me up and stuff. And I remember the doctor coming in. He said, man, he goes, you could have had hypothermia. You could have been in a hypothermic coma, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, if Bill didn't do what he did and got down with me like they teach us, strip down and get in that hypothermic bag, warm people up, you know, things could have been different.
For sure.
So, and I remember I stayed there for a few hours and maybe like, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours left. I don't know. And then, I'm like, I need to get back. You know, I want to go back. So, you know, somebody came from, I think it was actually Bill came, you know, in the GV and picked me up from the hospital, and we went back to the base. And everything at that point was still going on. And I think not long after I got back, that's when that tugboat or the barge had run aground. They couldn't get the anchor off it. And I know Mike was out there with a couple other guys, and they were doing what they could. And So I remember walking into the base, and I remember a reporter sitting in our galley, and he looked at me and he said, man, he's like, are you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. You know, I'm doing good. And he's like, well, how cold was the water? And I, man, I thought that was the dumbest question I've ever been asked. You know, so being a smart ass, I said, you know, I was so cold, I had lumps in my throat. He's like, what do you mean? I said, well, those were my testicles.
You know? That's good.
That probably didn't make it into the newspaper.
Little do you know.
Absolutely made it into the newspaper.
Oh, it did. Oh, awesome. That's awesome.
He put in there, Fireman Craven said it was so cold, he had lumps in his throat. He didn't put the testicle part.
Oh, too bad. Yeah. Too bad. That's awesome.
Yeah. So after
I wonder
that,
how many people, you know, got that. Like reading, the, you know, some right. some guy reading the paper on Sunday and, oh, I know what that means. He was right. Sort of snickering to himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was pretty funny. But, you know, I went back and took a shower. Changed clothes, got all cleaned up, and I went down and I went back on watch because all this stuff was going out. You know, my ship meets were still out there. So, until they finally called us off, and then, you know, I think is it Station Newport took over our guard. It was interesting. There was an 82-point turner that tried to make it out that had to turn around because the seas were so bad because the reefer broke loose. It started sailing across everywhere, tearing things apart.
Did that make you feel good when that happened? So, because you were just on 44 feet of 44 meadow, right? Yeah. And you guys made it and brought people back. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't realize there was other, you know, another 44 at our station. You know, I know Mike talked about another coxswain saying, holy cow, because Mike didn't go through the circuit training like this other guy did.
Right.
I mean, there was just a lot of stuff I personally missed out on that I didn't know. Like, you know, we went to some thing where they, you know, this town or the city will give you an award or something like that. And there was an air station crew there. And I was like, what are you guys doing here? They're like, well, we were flying above you guys the whole time. And I'm like, I had no clue there was a Hilo up. You know? But it was interesting.
Would you do it again?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. The next morning we woke up and we had to get dressed and, you know, our station was on stand down because we'd worked all night and everything like that. The commandant was on the beach and wanted to meet us, the crew. So we got to go down where that tugboat had ran aground and meet the commandant, which was pretty neat.
Yeah, that's kind of huge. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, you know it's an epic case when, if the commandant came out.
When you get to meet the commandant like a day later, mm-hmm. you know, if it's a couple months, it's one thing, but the next day.
Yeah. On the beach, yeah, right? Like, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But I got to tell you this story, too, that adds on to this. I remember a few months later had gone by, and we were on duty, and I think our senior chief came up to us, and he was telling me, Mike, you need to get your Bravos on. We're, you know, to get ready, you need to go down. The city's doing something for you. Nobody had given us a heads up at all. This was like at noon or something. We had to be there at 1, and it's like, okay, we're a small boat station. I don't have my Bravos here. So I was piecing together uniforms from what people had on board.
Yeah, and then you get the speech, right? Like, don't you have a sea bag? Where's your sea bag?
Yeah. 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 Sure. Yeah, I did get that. I remember that. So we hightail it to this Narragansett, the town hall, and I pull up in my car, and there's this lieutenant. And he comes up to my car, and he's like, are you Adam Cravey? I said, yes, sir. He's like, get out of the car. I'm thinking, what? He's like, get out of the car. I'm going to park it for you. And I'm like, okay. He's like, go inside. So I go up the door, and I remember Mike pulling up. I'm standing there at the door, and this lieutenant runs up. And his name was Lieutenant Rock. I don't think I'll ever forget this guy. And I remember.
Were you like, hey, whenever you're handing him the keys, were you like, don't scratch it, man? You know, like, that's, I'm just thinking, like, you know how you treat a valet? Like, you better not scratch this thing.
Did you tip him?
That's Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, why is this lieutenant taking my car and parking me and kicking me out? You know what I mean? It was kind of like, what's going on? Like, I had no clue.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
So, right. Do I still salute you now that you parked my car? Or do I? Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, you know what? I don't even. I couldn't find a cover. So I didn't have a cover to go with my Bravo. So
that's one way to get out of saluting, right?
Yeah, so I was a fireman stressing out about, you know, having a lieutenant there. Just get inside. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, I'm not in all my uniform, you know, freaking out about little stuff. But I remember going inside, and the vice commandant was there. And there was a senator was there, and there was a congressman there. And they pulled us up on a stage, and that's when they gave us our Coast Guard medals. Like, we had no clue we were getting anything or put in for anything. We had no idea. So that was pretty neat. And after everything was done, that Lieutenant Rock came up to me and he said, "You're having lunch with the Vice Commandant. We're going to this old restaurant. It's called the Coast Guard House in Narragansett, yep. Rhode Island." And he said, "What do you want to eat? I'm going to order you lunch." And I said, "Well, I'll just get like a roast beef sandwich or something like that." He goes, "No, listen. The Vice Commandant's buying you lunch. What do you want to eat?" I said, "Just sandwich or something." He's like, "No," because I'm going to order for you. I think you're going to have the stuffed shrimp. Oh, I'm sorry, the shrimp cocktail and the stuffed lobster.
Sounds like a right. plan, right? Yeah, I'll take the prawns too.
Right.
And I'm like, "No, I'll have a roast beef sandwich or something, you know." And then, you know, I just kind of remember walking away, just like I just didn't realize, I didn't know what a Coast Guard medal was.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we're trying to figure out, what is this, you know, and this is crazy. And then so we go to the Coast Guard house and we sit down and they got all the tables lined up and we're sitting there with the Vice Commandant in the middle, the congressman on one side, the senator, you know, of Rhode Island on the other side of him. And me and Mike are sitting directly across the table. And my senior chief is at the end of the table looking at us and just laughing, you know, and so the Vice Commandant, you know, we were talking, you know, and we're, you know, at a table, you know, like sitting at attention. At least I was, you know, that's all I remember.
Right.
But every time a waiter would come by to fill up our glass or something, he would look at him and say, the Vice Commandant would say, "Miss, those two, I just want to remind you, those two are having a shrimp cocktail and a stuffed lobster." And then she'd like, "Okay," walk away. And then they'd come back later and he'd like, "Miss, just to remind you, these two were having a trip." You know, it was kind of like my senior chief thought it was the best thing in the world, laughing his brains out.
Yeah.
You know, as he sat there and ate a roast beef sandwich or something, he had a sandwich. I was having stuffed lobster on the Vice Commandant's dime.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Something tells me the Vice Commandant did an expense report for that. Probably wasn't actually his dime.
Yeah, but still, still very cool, man, for him to like take the time out. Did you guys talk to him? Like, what did he ask you while you guys were sitting there for lunch?
We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor.
We're going to give you a key number about the future National Coast Guard Museum, and that number is 5.
There are 5 theme storylines: lifesavers around the globe, enforcers on the seas, defenders of our nation, champions of commerce, and protectors of the environment.
The exhibits and galleries in those storylines will be showcased in a 5-story museum.
And here's our favorite 5. For as little as $5 a month, you can be a plank owner and support construction of the National Coast Guard Museum.
For details on how you can get involved, go to coastguardmuseum.org/out. That's coastguardmuseum.org/OUT.
Want to check out is the Always Ready Collective, delivering art by and for daring fighters of the sea with their maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. Visit them on Facebook, Etsy, Instagram, and at alwaysreadycollective.com.
No, I really don't.
I mean, you didn't just stare at him. Did you? In POA and eat your lobster.
My question is, were you more scared when you jumped in the water to save those guys, or as a non-rate sitting there with the Vice Commandant? That's which was question. Scarier?
I was more scared sitting in front of, you know, meeting the Commandant and then meeting the Vice Commandant. Because it was, you know, trying to be all proper and everything. And oh my gosh, you know, yeah. Now I look back at like that rescue diving in the water and that tugboat swinging on me. And I just, man, that was just one of the neatest things I've ever done, you know. But what was cool though is my stepdad was in the Coast Guard at the time too. And he was a lieutenant commander at headquarters.
Oh yeah, dude! I know you rubbed this in his face, didn't you? Did you come back and you're like, "I stepped out." Oh. I mean, you guys gotta be kind of nice, but at the same time, like,
it depends, right?
Here's the difference between those who do the job and those who write whatever the hell you write up there.
You know the difference between me and you,
right? I'm pretty much the reason that you have a job as a lieutenant commander.
Yeah,
that's good.
How many times have you had lunch?
He heard about all this at headquarters, and then. once I, you know, I got out of the hospital, I called him and told him what was going on. So everybody knew, and he knew everything that was going on at headquarters. So it was pretty neat. It was kind of a whole family thing going on. You know,
yeah, I bet, man. Just beaming with pride. I mean, that's right.
It's
huge.
It's like, awesome. It's funny to me though, that you had a relative at headquarters and this going on, and nobody told you till like the day of.
Right.
Like, hey, go throw your dress.
When if you know, for anybody listening that doesn't know what a Coast Guard medal is, back in the day they used to give out gold life-saving medals and silver life-saving medals to members of the Coast Guard for like their actions while on duty. That's changed, and now you get a Coast Guard medal. I mean, so it's basically the equivalent of a gold life-saving medal for someone that's active duty.
It's the highest peacetime award we can get.
Yeah, it's this is the one, right? This is right. This is one you If you are on a really epic rescue, and you're craving to get advanced, I don't know how many points this thing is, but it's got to be more than three.
Probably five.
I bet it's more than three.
Yeah.
It's 6 points and 10% extra retirement.
Whoa!
That last part, you had me at 10% extra. Yeah, that's all. I mean, and well deserved. You know, especially given your story, definitely well deserved and a good thing.
Well, I know our senior chief said that they told him to put us in for medals, and he said he put us in for the silver, and they denied that, and were told to make it higher. So I don't know how it all came about, but I'd be honest with you, you know, I never expected to get anything, but I'm going to tell you something. It was tough to talk. I don't tell the story much, but it's one of being a non-rate with 7 points, more than most of the BM1s and BM2s there that time at the station, it came with some headache, you know?
That was pure jealousy on their part.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, man, especially when you're more junior, like awards are kind of a thing, right?
Right.
And then you – I think I think as you get higher into it, you start to realize that – a lot of awards are, you know, who's looking out for you? You know,
right.
who's there, who is willing to do the work to recognize what you did out there?
Right.
So, I mean, you just had really good bosses. That's what it boils down to. Just guys that were looking out for you.
I had some great bosses, you know, and I didn't think twice about doing this. I didn't think twice about jumping in. I didn't think twice about anything. You know, and that all comes down to training. You know, we had some fun times, we had some bad times, but you know, in the big picture, man, it's that training right there has saved my life and saved the six guys on that ship.
For sure.
You know, and Mike Underwood is probably, he's one of my really good friends. We still talk. You want to talk about a good guy? You know, if it wasn't for him, I mean, I could have died if he didn't swing that boat out and do what he did. I mean, I just can't imagine, you know, how things would be.
Did you even have a knife on you when you went in?
Yes, underneath the coveralls, yeah.
Okay, under the coveralls, yeah. You just had to dig for it as you're getting pulled toward the
As your hands are numb because you're in 31-degree water.
Yeah, holding on to two guys.
Right. I'm guessing they were not small dudes either.
No, they were, they were big boys.
Yeah.
They were big boys. I know we got to meet them later on and stuff, and they came by the station, and it was pretty neat, you know, getting thanked by them. And, you know, and boy, I tell you what, though, that's Narragansett is a small town, but that was a huge deal. You know, one of the biggest oil spills that the Coast Guard has and still uses, you know, during their training.
Right.
I think when I retired, I think a few months before I retired, they came in and did the, I can't remember what the training is. I've kind of blocked it all out, but it's, you know, oil spills, responding to stuff, all the type of stuff. And one of the pictures they showed was that North Cape oil spill with all the stuff on the beach.
You're like, I've been there.
I didn't say anything. Oh, okay. But I remember there was a BM2 at my station, Thomas Goff, and he was now a warrant officer at Sector Buffalo with me. He's like, oh, you should ask Adam about that. He can tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, nice.
So, of course, they did. And it's like, no, I'm not going to go into this. But, it was interesting.
I keep thinking about your lunchtime thing. So, like, even as an E-7, right? It's now they have a there's a, what do they call it at headquarters? The Admirals? The flag mess.
Oh, okay.
The flag mess. Yeah. And like you step into the flag mess, and I don't know where they find these CSs, but I mean they got to be like some grad level students at you know some culinary college or something. But
all our CSs are that good, Phil.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. For sure. Kind of like all our HSs, like take care of us.
Right. Motrin.
Yep. But yeah, Motrin, I mean, like you walk into that place and you're nervous. So I can't imagine. Right. You know, like that's definitely a big deal, dude, for a fireman. Even to get that kind of FaceTime with the commandant. Did he ever ask you like, hey, what would you change if you could?
No.
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 That's the go-to question. That's your one shot, and people always seem to pick dumb stuff to focus on.
Yeah.
I changed color of the uniform. I don't know.
You know what? Now that you say that, I'll tell you one thing that was very discouraging. One of the worst experiences I've had was the after-action stuff that happened with the National Transportation Safety Board.
You had to go through a whole investigation.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's a big deal.
And it wasn't on base. It was at some hotel. And I remember there was a Coast Guard lawyer there. And I remember Mike Underwood went in first. And, you know, I'm in Bravos. And I remember getting in there. And I never felt like I did something wrong. I've never felt so sick to my stomach. These people made me feel horrible about what I did. And, I mean, it was... What training did you have? Name every single thing you did. And it's like, well, there's the crewman, you know, the manuals and everything we have to fill out. It's all that training. And it's like, and I'm sitting there with a lawyer, you know, and he starts breaking everything down. Well, why didn't you put a wetsuit on? And it's like, well, you know, why didn't you have that before you went out? And it's like, well, we didn't know that we would have to do this. You know, nobody was planning on me jumping into the water. I mean, and I felt so talked down to, and I remember this one guy, I mean, he was just nasty with me, and he's like, well, you should have had this, and you should have had that. And I told him, I said, you know what? I said, have you ever tried to put a wetsuit on when you were soaking wet?
Good for you, man, standing up to it. Yeah, good for you.
And my tone was not, I was not very nice about it. And that lieutenant said, all right, time out, stop. And he pulled me outside. He's like, calm down. You didn't do anything wrong. They're just they're doing this because they're trying to find fault, you know. And I don't know if it's the lawyers were there from the tugboat, too. You know what I mean?
Right.
And if I didn't have to go back and go to the hospital because I was hypothermic and because I didn't put the right gear on, they could have got it out there and put that anchor down and dropped that barge. And that barge wouldn't have run aground and not cost them millions of dollars. You know, that's what it was all about.
Right. It's all about the money.
Trying to blame. Yeah. Trying to put fault on me. You know, but, you know, in the long run, you know.
You're like, yeah, because I lit the fire and I killed your engines.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Get out of here, guys. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, you know, I'm the one covered in glass when that pilot house exploded, you know?
Right.
I'm the guy, you know, that saved your guys' lives, you know, but you're worried about why didn't I put a wetsuit on and put the blame on me? You know, that's how it was. It was very, I kind of like that point, you know, it was really cool in the beginning having that medal and having the story. And then after that, you know, it made me really bitter to tell him the story, you know, because it really made me felt like, you know, I did something wrong. You know, but
what was the outcome? Do you know the outcome of the whole NTSB investigation? Like, who did they? I mean, I'm assuming, you know, blame went entirely on the tug company. But what did they say?
Yeah, I believe one of the outcomes was they haven't serviced the anchor chain properly. So when they try to get on, when they could get somebody on to drop the anchor, because I know Mike went back out. And throw some of their guys on that barge to get that anchor dropped. They couldn't because the anchor hadn't been serviced. So I think that was one of the faults that they proved. It was, you know, their fault, the tugboat company's fault.
Right.
But other than that, man, I'd be honest with you, I got orders not too long from then, and I left and went to HSA school, and that was like the last I had to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a cool event, though.
Yeah.
It's, I mean,
but those six points really helped me in an advancement, though.
They did.
Yeah, that was back when you could keep them around, too, right?
Yeah. Yes, you could keep them through the whole time.
Well, let's talk about your time as a health service technician. I mean, obviously, you like the career field. You did 20 years in it, right?
Yes.
Yep. What what was your favorite tour?
My favorite tour was on the Cutter Spar up in Kodiak.
Perfect, because that's the one I wanted to talk about. Because there you were an IDHS, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, So you are the ship's corpsman. Like, if somebody's got a boo boo or a pain or is sick, they come talk to you.
Broken hands, anything like that,
or STDs.
Nice. Okay. All right. Whoa. There we go.
We're trying to lead you there, but
right,
let's go.
Right for the jugular.
Yeah. It's interesting when a ship goes into dry dock. So I'm just gonna leave it there.
Do you have to look at it? You know, like when it happens, are you like, all right, man, just let me see it?
that's when you punt that up to the Kodiak clinic.
Solid Coast Guard answer. Yep. There we go.
Take two Motrin and go to the clinic.
I've got this referral here for you.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. No, the Cutter's Fire was absolutely the best bunch of guys I've ever met. I still have so many friends from them. You know, it was, you know, 225s. It's a tough job for a corpsman, because not only do you have your corpsman stuff to do, you got to go work on the bridge, you know. And, you know, I'm working up there doing helm. I'm doing radar. I'm doing plotting. I'm, you know, getting qualified everything up there, telling, you know, the head honcho when to turn, when to, you know, all that stuff.
Dude, leadets really do have the best job in the Coast Guard. Don't they?
Yeah.
Because they don't stand any of the watches. I totally thought an HS, I don't know what he would stand. Like, there's not like the corpsman watch or something?
No, it's the 225s are the optimally manned.
Yeah.
We used to say minimally, but that wouldn't be descriptive. It's optimally manned. Because
optimally manned.
You figure you're running, would you guys have 40 people on there, Adam, roughly?
Yeah. Anywhere from like 36 to 42, but, you know, then you don't have enough rack spaces.
Right.
And
the class of cutter they replaced was the 180s that had all but 100 people on them.
Hmm. Yeah, nothing like that. Yeah. But, you know, it's, you know, as a corpsman, you know, the SKs, the Lions, we were up on the bridge doing double watches.
Yeah.
You know, we always did. And I got tired of that. So I went and broke in engineers. So I got qualified import.
Back to your roots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, easy.
Yeah, back to
main controls pretty nice on a 225. Main controls pretty nice place to sit.
That's yes, especially when you're out in the Bering Sea. But you know, the best part was we went to Tista. We went to Hawaii for Tista.
Nice.
And the EO, a really good guy. Thank God he let me break an engineer. It was you know, way better to sit down low than it is up high in 30-foot seas. But I was running drills during Tista as an engineer, which blew all those Navy guys away, you know.
Yeah,
so it was fun. I got to learn a lot.
Well, talk to us, Adam. What is sick bay? What's sick bay look like on a 225? How does a corpsman kind of do their day job outside of the watches on a ship? What are you doing? And where are you doing it?
So, sick bay is actually really nice on a 225.
I thought you were going to say a closet. This is someone who has no idea. I thought you were going to be like, yeah, it's pretty much the size of like half a closet.
Pretty much everything's really nice on a 225.
Yes, it is. I mean, we actually had Tempur-Pedic mattresses.
Like on the hospital beds?
No, on every ship. I'm sorry, on every berthing.
Oh, like in your berthing. Wow, right. Yeah. That's,
yeah. Man. Everybody had that. So it was nice.
The FRC had like a piece of toilet paper laid down there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, sick bay is really nice. I mean, I've gone T80 on a 180 before, and that's a closet. That was a nightmare. You could probably fit about six 180 sick bays inside of a 225. You know, it's nice. You got your own head in there. The walls are padded.
That's a luxury all in itself, right?
Huge win.
You got your own head.
Yeah.
Did you get your own shower in there too?
Yes.
Oh man, what a deal! Yeah, there. Okay, so nope. There's the payback.
It was actually a decon shower, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. It was fresh water.
That's what it was technically for, you know. But you know, even being a corpsman and going doing inspections, man, there's some dirty people on board.
Oh, for sure. Well, you got to test the valves and make sure they work, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But, you know, the only bad thing is nobody tells you at first that the plumbing is plumbed into the black water because of decon. So watching bubbles come out of the stack from all the soap I used taking showers in there is pretty interesting.
That's good.
And it's poopy bubbled water.
Oh,
yeah. But, no, it was really nice. It was a great setup, a lot of room in there. You know, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of tasks that they put on the corpsmen to do. A lot of stuff you have to, you know, just like at the clinics, you know, go through health records, you know, inventories, you know, control substance, all that type of stuff. I mean, it's the same thing. So it's, you know, most of the day I sit in there and, you know, 225, you don't really see that many patients. Everybody's pretty close and you got a good hold on how, you know, everybody's health is, especially being out in the Bering Sea. I was pretty fortunate to only have, I think, one guy. I had a medevac from Dutch Harbor who fell down from the galley to the engine room, control room, because somebody left the hatch open and didn't tell anybody, so they BM3 stepped back and fell down, which is interesting. And then another BMC who had a appendicitis when we were out, down towards the island of Kiska, and you know, that was working at 10 o'clock in the morning, calling doc, say, hey, get a helo out here. And then the helo finally shows up around 2 to 3 in the morning, medevac him off. So it was interesting. But for the most part, you know, most of the times I stood watch.
Right.
You know, and I did a lot of fighting to get all my, corpsman work done, sort of say, and be on top of it. But, It was by far my best tour that I've ever had, the best friends I've ever made, you know, and still today I still talk with my XO and we take hunting trips and, you know, we all visit each other. So now Buffalo, on the other hand, that tour stunk.
Was that a clinic?
Yeah, it was another independent duty corpsman job. So it was me and an HS3.
Oh, so you like just at the sector or at the...
Yeah, just in the sector. So we.
Well, yeah, hey, real quick, what was the most common injury on a ship?
Seasickness.
Oh,
I'm sitting here shaking my head. Yep. Yeah. Doc handing out those little pink pills all the time.
You know what though? Here's, I'll tell you one of my little secrets that I did underway.
Motrin.
No
foot powder.
Well,
look at the horizon. You'll be fine.
You know, you get to know everybody, so you know who's really sick. And then right. You got your frequent flyers that when they got to stand watch or, hey, everybody's got to do double watch because we're down people, you know what I mean? And we're going to go out here and this is going to be a crummy trip, the weather. You got the guys who immediately flock to you, you know? And if I start handing out those pink pills, they're drowsy. You know, they're not going to be able to stand or watch properly. So what I would do is I used to buy a whole bunch of Reese's peanut butter cups in a whole big old bag like you get for Halloween. And I would tell everybody when they come in here, and I used to tell them, I said, you know, chocolate gives off that good sensation, good feeling sensation. You know, they say chocolate relaxes you. I would tell them, I say, you know, this works with seasickness too. And I would give them a Reese's peanut butter cup. And I kid you not, but if they weren't really sick, these guys would go, oh, doc, that worked awesome. Oh, that was great. You know, and I just go away laughing.
Dude, you just ruined it. That was probably like, there's probably a ton of people out there right now that are trying to feign illness.
And
here's your Reese's. You're fine.
Yeah. You know?
That's awesome.
Yeah. But, you know, you got to learn tricks like that, man. You know, because, you know, and, you know, the hyper vigilant, the hyper, you know, stance that, you know, medically that the Coast Guard is, you know, that's why you're in. If you're a train wreck, you're not in, you know, and you know, the people that are really sick, we can weed that out, you know?
Right.
But sometimes you just got to kind of come up with stuff.
And as a corpsman, what was kind of like the most, let's say you were called on to do the most, I mean, what's the most complex thing that you could have done? I mean, can you push drugs? Can you, what's your, you know, what's the, you went to the IDHS school to be out there independently. What do they train you in? What's the highest end thing that you guys could do?
Well, the Navy school is not like the new corpsman IDHS school. Right, the Navy School Surface Warfare Independent Duty Corpsmen. I mean, they are me and another gal who was in my class, the Navy class. There was 24 of us that started. Two HSs. I think they take only like at that time. I think there was only 7 a year going to that school, and it's a year long. It's a year long school. She's now the, I believe she's a Rating Force Master Chief for the HSs. We learned how to do trachs, chest tubes, you know, needle to the heart to drain the blood around the, you know, needle thoracentesis, drain the blood around the heart, you know, in the little sac, pericardial sac. We got to do all that stuff on live pigs.
Very cool.
That's how far in depth that school and training went for us. I mean, we did, you know, a lot of stuff that PETA don't want you, you know, we can't say, but
it's critical, right? I mean, that proves that you can do it, and it's, you get no closer to real life. Right. Yeah, so I mean.
Right. Yes, everything to wiring your mouth shut, which, you know, we practice on, you know, sutures, all the drugs that you can imagine. We had them on board. So, I mean, we could do some minor surgeries, you know, and if stuff got real, you know, I know the IDCs that went to the Navy school, we know a lot more. We got a lot more training than the guys go through the Coast Guard HS schools.
Yeah.
Saying that, leaving that school and seeing all my Navy friends that went straight, I mean, every one of them went straight overseas, you know, to Iraq or Bahrain or whatever. You know, one guy went to the, you know, went directly on the front lines with the SEAL team, became their corpsman. You know, it kind of sucked because we got back to the Coast Guard and we weren't allowed to do anything. You know, I went and I asked, you know, they require you to carry certain things on board, right? So you're required to have this much suture material, this, you know, this and that, this and that. But I wasn't allowed to carry lidocaine when I went to Buffalo. I couldn't carry lidocaine. They said, you don't need that. You can just send people to the hospital. And I was like, well, how am I supposed to keep up my proficiency on giving sutures and doing that? That's stuff that I could do in-house, have somebody back to work in 5 minutes, you know, right, if it's a small cut or something like that. But all that stuff's been, was kind of stripped from me. So it was kind of disappointing coming back from the Navy, being able to do all this stuff, to going back in the Coast Guard world where they really limit you, you know, and things might have changed. You know, I retired in 2012. You know, I started up a lot of stuff before I left. You know, why can't I do this? And I just have no clue where it's at now.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that always comes in waves, right? Like, people will be like, oh, you can't do it. And then all of a sudden, same thing as the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, all of a sudden there's a war that you get involved in. And voila, look at that, green light for everything, you know? Right. Like, let's just get the job done. So it's, yeah, I get it. I mean, it's just one of those things. Yeah. We happen to not be on the front lines for that one. And, hey, we're going to pull it back. And unfortunately, you don't get to do sutures.
It's tough if you feel like you have a lot.
No, it is. No,
you got a bunch
of
tools in your toolbox, and you're not allowed to use the tools. That could be tough, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What's like, you know, they give you those TCC kits, tactical combat casualty care.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, you know, you train with those things, and I don't know. I'm sure somebody out there is like, hey, you're not supposed to use this. But honestly, if somebody got shot and you knew how to do it, you're just going to do it.
Right.
You're going to do it anyway, right? Yeah. Whether you got the tool or not. If you don't want to give me the lidocaine, the guy's not going to get anesthesia, and we're just going to hit it. You know, like.
Yeah. Exactly.
Here, bite down.
I tell you what, though, as a corpsman, you asked me what was my favorite thing. My favorite thing was I got to go to work and stab people and then go home.
You're that guy. All right.
Yep.
I got to go stab people and go home. That's awesome. Yep. Did you ever give the anthrax vaccines?
I did not. They wouldn't allow us to do it. We had to send everybody over where they were certified at, you know, because up in the Great Lakes, you got two doctors. You got one doctor in Traverse City, Michigan, That's where I'm at right now. And you got another doctor in Detroit. So I'm on, you know, the East Coast of the Great Lakes, you know, taking care of everybody from Lorain, Ohio, up to Messina, New York, you know. And, yeah, I can't do that. So, there, you know, because of silly training, you know, it's like, train me and I can hammer out all these people or whoever needs it. No, but we had to fly somebody in from Detroit or have them come over, pay them per diem and all that good stuff to do something that, you know, I'm sitting here in chief watching a third class do it. That was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, why the third class over the E7? Time, like certification or what?
Yeah, because they gave training to the clinics where their doctors were at.
Oh,
so they were only allowed. So. Okay. Again, you know, I'm sure things have totally changed, and I don't even know if they're giving that anymore. Unless you're going overseas, but
well, I mean, you were in District 9. Enough said.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, there was a reason you wanted to get back down to Miami after you you graduated. from school, right?
He said he's in Traverse City now. He must love District 9.
Well, I mean, now he's just he got caught up in it. That's where we go to die. Yeah. They say, but
yeah, and there's nothing like being a Miami Dolphins fan stuck in Buffalo. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I believe it.
Even though both teams stink.
I was going to say, that's, I don't know what Buffalo has to hold over you in that case. But
yeah, lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, so, we so much appreciate your time today, man, and we thank you for your service. Thank you for that story and for the background on the independent duty HSs. That was it's always cool to hear about different rates and to throw a couple jabs in where we can. Yeah, sounds like absolutely. You threw in a ton of jabs on us, so it was welcome, right?
I see what you did there.
Oh, come on. There. That was pretty good. Oh, yeah.
That was full dad. Phil went full dad joke.
I did. That was terrible. Worst dad joke ever.
Now, Adam, thanks for your time today, man. We really appreciate it. What a great story. Thanks for telling it. I'm glad you did. I think that's a great story that people needed to hear. And hope maybe you'll tell it some more. And learn to really appreciate what you did, because it sounds like parts of it afterwards weren't so good for you.
Yeah. I appreciate that, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. Any parting shots?
No.
All right, man. That wasn't even a joke. That's just what I normally say. But hey, Adam, again, thanks, man. Thank you for your service to the country. Stay healthy during this quarantine COVID crisis. And yeah, man, share that story. That's a phenomenal story. Well-deserved recognition. Thanks again.
I appreciate it.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coast.
Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooout.com or your favorite podcast platform and like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.